Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Here in the studio tonight, it is Ian
and Peakless Mountaineer.
A lot of people still unaware, I think, of what's going on, because last time I saw, there was no line out in front of the nearby corporate banks over the entire week. So the panic hasn't hit yet.
Well, it hasn't hit Main Street, but it's definitely hit Wall Street.
I mean,
they'll show a list of how all of the banks are doing, and it is just an entire column of red.
Yeah, even the big mega banks that are quote-unquote safe are also down.
Well, and that's one of the big things about this. I mean, it technically wasn't a big bank because they changed the definite. Well, and by they,
when
I mean Trump
it,
specifically.
Are you referring to?
SVG, or sorry,
SVB, Silicon Valley
Silicon
Bank.
Valley Bank. It technically wasn't a big bank because Trump said, okay, well, it instead of the $50 billion mark off, it'll be a $250 billion mark off. So it's technically a medium-sized bank. But it's, you know, on the weightier end of medium-sized.
But also the second-largest bank failure in U.S. history.
Right, exactly. So it's definitely hit Wall Street. All of the major banks are gobbling up assets left and right. One of the big aspects of this, though, is the shift from small and medium-sized banks to large banks.
Yeah, that was something that we talked about earlier, I think, this week. You called in, I think, about it, if I recall correctly. And that is very concerning because, number one, those larger banks aren't necessarily safer just because they're bigger.
Right, and that's one of the things that this proves, because Silicon Valley Bank was it was enormous. I mean, by any reasonable metric, this was huge, and it was certainly no safer, obviously. And if you looked at the liquidity, because someone managed to put together a nice little chart of what the liquidity was on a great number of banks, and it was just unbelievably underwater on this.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. Every single bank is some kind or another of bankrupt. They have to be by definition. There have been a couple of banks that attempted to get started, attempted to get approved with the idea of, hey, we will actually have enough money in case everyone wants to get their money.
Are you talking about the crypto bank? What was it called? Avanti or something like that? They changed their name. There's this lady named Caitlin Long. She's a crypto lady who used to work on Wall Street. And Custodia, that's what they changed it to.
One of the banks that I've heard of. There was another either Narrows or Narrow Bank. And from what I understand, it's just a straight up regular bank, nothing to do with crypto. But again, the same idea.
But they were going to be like fiscally sound or something?
Right, exactly. Having 100% reserves
what happened
or 108%.
To them?
Oh, they're denied.
That's what happened with Custodia Bank. So Custodia, they went to Wyoming, where Wyoming, as you may know, passed maybe in like 2019 or something. They passed a series of legislation on a state level that made them the friendliest state for cryptocurrency businesses. So Kraken moved their headquarters there. This Custodia Bank started up there, basically, and jumped through all the state hoops to start this what they call special depository in special depository something company or whatever. Anyway, they're not insurance company.
Or?
I don't know if insurance was the right word. That's the word that's coming to me. But anyway, they aren't a quote unquote bank in the traditional sense because they're special.
Mm-hmm.
What all that means, I don't know. It's something they specifically made with the intention of attracting cryptocurrency businesses.
Right.
But anyway, it was essentially puts them into the banking code or the banking system. They then applied to the Federal Reserve at that point and said, we want access to your services. We want to be able to receive wire transfers. We want to be able to send wire transfers. We want to do ACH. We want to be a member of the club, basically.
And the Federal Reserve said, great, right?
No, they sat on the application for longer than they were legally supposed to sit on the application and then ultimately denied them the access to the club. David, on the line in San Francisco, you're on with Ian and Peakless Mountaineer on Free Talk Live's Live Saturday show. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, howdy. A couple of things. There's an article just came out here. What was it? The CaliforniaLocal.com. Did Peter Thiel cause the Silicon Valley Bank to crash? And if I remember right, Peter Thiel is a pretty prominent libertarian.
So, he claims to be.
How did Peter Thiel, one man, cause a bank to crash?
Funds started by Trump supporting Silicon Valley billionaire led fatal run on bank. And apparently he did some massive withdrawal like the day before or something.
So you're
like
blaming
that.
A bank customer for pulling his money out of the bank?
Well, I'm just looking at the headline. I haven't read into it yet.
The newspaper
the
there is,
world,
is doing so. Yeah, is blaming a customer.
Remember the old Wizard of Oz, right? And that mm-hmm. was supposed to be a parable about economics.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Farmers had to live in the real world because they lived by whatever the weather brought them. But you had these penthouse scoundrels who would come up with fly-by-night schemes, and they would change the value of the money. And so the people that lived in the real world had to deal with money that was constantly being devalued or revalued. And they people living in the real world were always being cheated by the penthouse boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example. Right now, you got Donald Trump crying because he might get arrested on Tuesday. And he basically wants the taxpayer to pay for Stormy Daniels' blackmail.
Okay, he basically wants the same thing.
He was trying to write that off on his taxes, right?
Well,
he was trying to write the Stormy Daniels.
I have
Daniels
no idea
off
what he
on
does on his taxes.
What Donald Trump wants is the same thing that Donald Trump always wants: all of the attention. That is his entire motivation.
Well, the money too.
Well, money is a method to get attention. He wants fame. He has always wanted fame and attention.
He has money.
And right now, all of the focus is off of Donald Trump, and that just drives him nuts.
Well, I want to go back to the banking thing, David. I'm curious. Maybe there's something we can agree on here, because we don't agree with you on a lot of stuff when you call in. But are you supportive of the big banks or skeptical or hostile?
Well, the banks, you know, if you want to say Silicon Valley talking about penthouse weird stuff, you know, we're in a world where the economy, you all should know what hyperinflation is, right?
Certainly, yeah.
So we're in an early stage of hyperinflation.
Okay.
You know, you could buy a nice house in San Francisco for $32,000 50 years ago.
Right.
Today, it's like $1.25 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go in the Midwest, those prices aren't the same, because the Midwest is more likely to live in the real world with the world of weather and climatic conditions. But skyscraper penthouse San Francisco has got such a fake economy that we have more empty units. We've got 6 times more empty apartments in San Francisco than we do homeless people. We've got maybe 10,000 homeless people. We've got 61,000 empty apartments, houses, condos, because there are speculators.
Mm-hmm.
And those speculators don't want to damage the doorknob, and so they don't let anybody live in them.
Well, hold on.
And
so
it doesn't make any sense.
Well, no. I understand what he's saying here. So let's go back to the Wizard of Oz for just one second. Now, what people tend not to know is that it wasn't ruby slippers originally. It was silver slippers, because the whole moral of that story as a book was the bimetallism, gold and silver, mm-hmm. having hard metal.
The yellow brick road.
Right. Yeah. The yellow brick road, as compared to the Emerald City, which is green dollars. So mm-hmm. fiat currency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason that all of these that all of these apartments are getting bought up and not used is because of money printing. So since you cannot store your wealth effectively in dollars because they're getting printed up, what a lot of people will do is just buy properties. Now,
I think you're mixing two parables.
Say again?
There should be a 10-to-1 ratio for paper to gold, right?
What are you referring to?
Well, Wizard of Oz doesn't talk about the what used to be called the M1 ratio, that the U.S. Treasury could print 10 times more paper than it had in gold.
And there's so no rule about that.
If you've got a good education system in your society, and everybody's in basic communication with each other, they know how to count, they know how to write, they know how to communicate with each other and get stuff done. So that should be seen as an asset, whether or not you've got tons of gold or not.
Well, so
education should be seen as a positive.
You seem to be approaching this completely from a top-down perspective, and that's just not an effective way to run a society. Now, is your education part of your wealth?
Well, if you don't have enough tons of gold.
Come again?
If you don't have enough tons of gold, you got to do something.
It doesn't matter how many tons of gold there is, as long as there is a certain amount of tons of gold. The reason that gold was used is because it has a high stock-to-flow ratio. Now, what that means is it's really hard to get. And since it is harder to... Hold on, let me... Since it is harder to get gold than just to do things that people will give you gold for, that's why they used it.
Well, plus the price can change, right?
Exactly.
As it becomes more valuable, you don't need to have as much of it in order to have the same quote-unquote value, because the value can go up as demand increases for various different reasons. But I don't disagree with you, David, that education is important, and that's why people should voluntarily support things like that. You're a communist, so you tend to support forcing people to support. Oh, you're not?
No. Have you ever read any Thomas Paine?
Yeah.
Thomas Paine was the guy that got the American Revolution won. And he starts off by talking about the difference between a society and a government, where a society is where everybody's in common agreement and they get something done and everybody goes home happy and has a nice supper. In a world of complications, where you have to create bureaucracies, and the bureaucracies have little bad training and poor instructions, then you're ending up with a government, and that the government usually botches things up, but a society is a happier place to live.
So what would you call yourself then?
Well, my great-great-great-grandpappy signed the Declaration of Independence, and I believe that a society is better than a government. But I'm not a fool to think that we shouldn't have a sewer system, or that we shouldn't have clean tap water running, that we should have railroad controls, that we shouldn't allow poison to be dumped in a river and a railroad company to keep making profits.
Now, do you believe that it is possible that a sewer system can be set up by companies without forcing people to pay for them?
Well, if you look at... you know, everybody that always complains about, how much would they have to pay you to work at the sewage plant?
I'm sure there's a market rate for it.
Okay, but would you...
Well, that really depends. I mean, so here's the thing. Like, it's not a fixed ask, because our sewage technology changes all of the time. Our protective equipment changes all of the time. So depending on, you know, what era of technology, it's going to be a more or less disgusting job for me to do that. Now, me personally, that's probably just not the best use of my abilities.
Major Payne is on the line in Michigan. You're on Free Talk Live, Major.
Yeah, evidently old Gavin Newsom's got caught with his hand in the cookie jar.
He's the governor of California.
Yeah, he's got three wineries out there in California, and he had all of his money in that Silicon Valley Bank.
Just before the
governor government decided to step in and bail these schmucks out, he was having secret meetings with Biden and the Secretary of the Treasury and the Fed. So, he was greasing some wheels and trying to save his own butt.
And he did get his butt saved in that case, because the federal government and the form of the Federal Reserve has come in and they've said, don't worry, all you big depositors at Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, we got you covered. We're going to go ahead and use the entirety, basically, of the Federal Deposit Insurance Fund. And on top of that, you know, another $150 billion of quote-unquote special assessment coming from the banks. Mm-hmm. That's how they're going to pay all of these account holders for... the accounts that they otherwise would have probably lost most, if not all of. And further, that brings up a story that I have here from tonight, just a quickie from Secretary Yellen. She's saying that don't think that just because they protected the uninsured deposits on these two banks, that they're going to protect uninsured deposits on future bank failures. According to CNBC, she told senators that government refunds of uninsured deposits won't be extended to every bank that fails, only those that pose, quote, systemic risk to the financial system. So don't be surprised when it turns out that banks where politicians bank are the ones that have the systemic risk, or banks where their corporate buddies have accounts are the ones where there's a systemic risk. But those other banks that don't have any of their friends with accounts, oh, those won't be systemic, and they'll just be allowed to go under.
Well, and that's a big part of this, is it's sort of a backward net, you see. The big fish slip through, the small ones get caught up.
Right.
So it's very much like a spider web, you know, something big enough, it'll just tear right out. But a small one, it'll just get wrapped right up in it. So all these small regional banks, oh, they're going down. But all the big boys,
too big to fail.
Right. They're too big to fail. They're going to be gobbling up customers left and right.
This has even gone over to Europe. I mean, the bank stock all across the world is dropping on the market. So I don't know how in the hell they're going to put this fire out.
Yeah, it's almost like people realized the way banks work or something.
I don't think they know how they're going to put it out either. I mean, they're desperately trying to keep, you know, kind of keep kicking the can down the road. And I think that's where the $30 billion that they're now teeing up for First Republic Bank is coming into play. And I'm wondering what your interpretation of this was, because we discussed it a couple nights ago here on Free Talk Live, that it might have just been last night, that it was the 11 top biggest banks, so probably Bank of America, Chase, those guys, coughed up $30 billion, so, you know, roughly $2 to $3 billion a pop. And they said, we're going to save First Republic Bank, because it hasn't failed yet. It's just been plummeting in the stock value. They've definitely got some serious problems. But they threw in the $30 billion to show a show of support for the regional banks. Yeah. What do you think about that? Buy that one?
Oh, so that's been touted as, oh, well, they just spontaneously reached out to help
own.
They just decided to do this themselves, which, I mean, to be fair, is almost believable, because the more banks fail, especially all at once, the more the general trust in banking itself goes toward where it actually ought to be, which is zero, and it is actually in their best interests, but it's now.
That's why I said
out.
It was like $30 billion for these guys is like nothing. $2-3 billion a piece. That's a couple days revenue. Caller, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Pecos Mountaineer.
Hey, Ian, it's Matthew. I'm just curious to see how we talk about all these banks with these billions of dollars, but they came after you for quote unquote millions of dollars. And the fact that they've prosecuted you and you're facing jail time, and yet these banks that have just settled away billions of dollars are somehow unaccountable and they're bailing people out. How does that make you feel?
Well, I mean, obviously they're going to target people that are their opposition, and that's just the way of the world. So it's expected.
So basically, like, they've targeted you, but yet these banks are able to get away with essentially murder in terms of wrecking people's savings, and yet you were trying to just convert dollars to Bitcoin, and yet that's somehow an unconscionable thing that people have done.
Well, and part of this, those have everything to do with each other. So what Ian was doing, he didn't do fractional reserve. He didn't give money he didn't have to people, because that's not something he can do. He had everything that he was selling. He actually had it. That is the threat. Now, these banks, they don't actually have the money that they're selling to everyone. So they can't let you operate with 100% reserves. They'll take you down.
Well, further, one of the most insulting parts of the case, in the Crypto 6 case, was that the banks were also part of this. So there were these poor people online that got scammed by some online scammers, and every single one of them went to a bank, stood in front of a human being, a bank teller, and ordered their money to be sent to me or Aria or nobody, somebody who was involved in helping people buy Bitcoin in order for the purpose of buying Bitcoin. And not one of those bank tellers got arrested. Not one of the bank managers got arrested. And those banks presided over those people sending far more money than we ever received, because many of these people sent, you know, one guy sent over $1 million and 900,000 of it didn't come to us. 900,000 of it went somewhere else. And the FBI didn't even bother to investigate that. They didn't even bother to ask him one single question about where else he might have sent the $900,000 that he sent out. Yeah, they only wanted to know about the money that he sent to the Shire Free Church and Ian Freeman.
Yeah, so they don't care about the 90% of this transaction. Nope. They care about two things. One, the cryptocurrency. And two, you keep saying terrible things about the government that happen to be true.
Yeah. Anything else, Matthew?
And it's imagine trading value for lawyers is illegal, but trading value for FRNs is somehow against the law.
Yep. Well, it's a crazy system, and that's why it needs to come to an end. And maybe it's closer than we realize. Janet Yellen saying that, no, they're not going to bail everybody out if future banks fail. They're just doing it for the most important banks.
Well, and a lot of this has to do, in my opinion, with the fact that they were planning this. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it just so happens that they happened to take out Silicon Valley Bank, which is, of course, associated with a bunch of internet companies, mm-hmm. and some amount of cryptocurrency. And then they just so happened to, for no apparent and discernible reason that can ever be articulated by anyone, take down Signature Bank, which was
an insolvent.
Yeah, it wasn't insolvent. They admit that. They were concerned about contagion, which is about as nebulous a thing as you could say. But it had no liquidity issues. It was doing fine in as far as banks can do well in this environment. But no, the regulators decided to take it down. It will not get a chance to get back up. It will be split apart.
They're selling it,
yes,
from what I understand.
Exactly. Now, in my opinion, this was planned. This is a very specific, they used their chance. They're like, okay, this is the opportunity to start shutting the exits from the U.S. dollar.
That's what people are saying online, on social media, that they are closing the exits because they know that the financial reckoning is going to come, and they don't want people to be able to get into alternatives like cryptocurrency or perhaps gold and silver very easily.
That's exactly right. And here's the thing. You have to boil the frog as slowly as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to start by taking down the big ones. So this is the Band-Aid ripoff part of this thing. Okay, here's the big pain where we take down the biggest ones that are giving opportunities to cryptocurrency companies and involving themselves in cryptocurrency programs. Now, after this, all of the banks that they have to destroy will be much smaller. You'll barely even feel these ones disappearing. Mm. So, for example, I think that within the next year and a half, Fidelity Bank, which has increased its service to include Bitcoin and Ethereum trading, I think that it is going to get targeted certainly within the next year and a half. And here's a big part of this. So, like, what they're planning on doing to make sure that what happened to Silicon Valley Bank never happens again is that, so Silicon Valley Bank had these assets that had lost their value, and they weren't
the
able to
bonds.
Right, and they weren't able to, well, treasury bonds and
mortgage-backed securities,
right. So they had these assets that had lost their value in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And
thanks to the Federal Reserve raising rates, right?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. They had planned as if the rates would never be increased.
Well, they hadn't been for like, what, a decade or something
right.
like that? So
they planned as if quantitative easing would last forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it didn't, they got caught with their pants down. So in order to make sure that this never happens again, there is a program where banks will be able to go to this program set up by the FDIC and the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And
is this the $2 trillion program, the Fed's Bank Term Funding Program?
Yep, that's the one, mm-hmm. the Bank Term Funding Program, which, as I said at the beginning of the week, there's $2 trillion that are just parked at the Fed, and I think that's what they're going to use to fuel this. And wouldn't you know it, that the BPFT is about $2 trillion.
Mm.
Okay, so what this is allowing is these assets that are actually worth less than you paid for them in the beginning. Okay, well, you can use those as collateral for a loan. Now, it's a one-year loan, but you can use them as collateral for a loan at their original value.
One of our chatters in our chat server, which you can join over at chat.freetalklive.com, that'll give you the instructions on how to get on our Matrix server. Meatball DeSantis's bootlicker posted this. Looks like an image from perhaps 4chan, where it says Santander to crash before next Friday. You heard it here first. Just got fired from this awful bank. There is literally no money. They've made awful investments in at least six countries and want to downsize to an online banking service should they get a bailout. They're cutting credit card limits so people can't withdraw money. This is big, he says. Unlike the banks that crashed already, Santander is an international bank that works with middle to lower class private citizens, much more than business and rich people. The mood is awful. There are already talks of a massive recession all across the West. It is all but confirmed. Now, obviously, this is just a, you know, somebody posting to, yeah, just somebody posting to the internet, but it's interesting nonetheless. And you
pointed, it wouldn't surprise me.
Right, and you pointed out, Pikulas, that Santander was making headlines within the last couple of years for telling its clients that they would no longer be allowed to send any wire transfers to Bitcoin exchanges.
That's exactly right. So this guy's saying that it's going to last a week. I'm going to tell you, no, it's going to get bailed out. They're going, and here's the thing. So they're not announcing that you are simply not allowed to do anything with crypto. That would be telling. That might actually spawn people to go, oh, wait, why are they so threatened by cryptocurrency?
Well, when you say they, you mean the Federal Reserve, the federal government, because Santander did announce that you can't do it.
Exactly. So a bank like Santander, who has announced, I am forthrightly getting away from cryptocurrency, you watch, it'll get patted on the head like a good boy.
Yeah, they're in the protected status.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just like New Republic Bank now is getting bailed out, Santander, if it has trouble, it will get bailed out in a hurry.
Well, now, the poster makes an interesting claim, and that is that Santander is saying if they get a bailout, that they want to become an online bank, which would mean closing branches, shutting down their bank bureaucracy, ultimately, because online banks don't need locations, right? They just rely on ATMs and bank by mail, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it would be a huge cost cutting to essentially fire all physical bank branch staff and not have to pay whatever rents that they're paying on those locations. Because obviously, and with any business, your payroll is your number one expense. So maybe they could, you know, manage to stay afloat if they changed gears.
I mean, not to mention that you have real estate prices. And as we were talking about last hour very briefly, like, the price of real estate gets heavily inflated because it's used as a store of value. So when you're paying the rents on these places, or at least the property taxes, that is also a pretty huge expense. So, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
We got Tim. He's on the line in Florida. Tim, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
So I went into a convenience store to either buy some BCH or BTC from an ATM. I had actually pulled out cash. I'm here in Southwest Florida, and so I go into this convenience store. I always buy gas over there. I always noticed they had a Bitcoin ATM. I go in, and there's two chip strip clips, if you know what I'm talking about.
What kind of clips?
Well, like merchandising clips for chips. You know, it's like an
Yeah, it's like a string of chips that like might hang down from the shelving unit.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, and they were actually hanging down in front of the Bitcoin ATM screen. Hmm. So I parted them, and it says network connection not available. Please try again later.
Hmm.
So I'm like, okay, and they're trying to count money. They're trying to do shift change. But I look at the girl. They're Eastern European. I said, I got to ask you. I said, she's like, oh, you need Bitcoin? She says, out of order.
Hmm.
I'm like, can I ask you something? She's like, sure. I said, is it a technical issue or is it because of fear? And she said, fear.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this is in Florida. You know, Bitcoin ATMs are very popular here right now.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because in recent weeks, there have been some targetings. There was one company called Bitcoin of America that operated 2,500 Bitcoin vending machines around the country. Their operators got arrested by the state of Ohio and the Secret Service.
Wow.
Wow. In a 28 police department jurisdiction investigation, they've been charged with multiple felonies. Sounds very much like the Crypto 6 case, except a lot bigger, right? 2,500 Bitcoin vending machines. We had four here in New Hampshire. And then there's another Bitcoin ATM operator that has gone bankrupt, one of the major ones. I think it was CoinCloud, if I recall correctly. So it's looking like it's getting tough out there for these Bitcoin vending machine operators.
They went after CoinCloud. Dang, they were.
Maybe it's the wrong name, but it was a biggie. One of them went bankrupt. No, they didn't go after them. They just went bankrupt. So I don't know what the behind the scenes story is on that. That's a few weeks old. That particular story. Right. But Tim, did you try going anywhere else, or was it just this one location?
No, I've been pretty busy, but Monday or Tuesday I'm going to go to a different location. They're all over the place, but
just to be clear, was the message on the screen like a piece of paper that had been taped to it, or was it an actual like computer monitor message?
It was a computer monitor message. It actually said there was no network connection, but I did just want to say that I talked to the girl for a second. I'm like, I know you're doing shift change, but I actually mentioned you, Ian, because I think your case is going to be a precedent that they use to basically it. I mean, it's bad enough for you, but on top of that, anyone operating a Bitcoin ATM is potentially going to be arrested for what do you call it?
Unlicensed money transmission?
Laundry. Well, I mean, I don't know if they're going to bring that charge against the companies that have got the money transmission permit from FinCEN. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why they went after this Bitcoin of America. They were claiming that they didn't have the money transmitter license in that case. Also, they're claiming money laundering and the whole
money
usual.
Money laundering. That's going to be the big one.
That may very well be. That may be their in on going after the other companies. Like, oh, well, you haven't stopped every single old lady from coming in here and putting money into the machine. Well, we had the requirements. We had the license. We had we required them to show their ID, and they still put their ID in, and they still jump through the hoops, because that's what's going to happen. You know, it doesn't matter whether you've got the government license. These people are going to fall for these scams, unfortunately, because these scammers... They know what they're doing.
I sent so much money to a Romanian, but it was through Western Union. I fell for it when I was younger, but
really?
I used Western Union. And they say up front, they say, look, they never warned me or anything. You know, they didn't ask any questions.
They took your money.
They just let it on through. Yeah.
Right. Jet is on the line calling from somewhere. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, Jet.
Yeah, Las Vegas.
Do me a favor, Jet, back away from that phone of yours. It's distorting pretty heavily.
Got it. Talk softer,
that's
maybe.
Better.
How about
that's
that?
Good. Yeah, that's good. Go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to talk about the SEC gang a little bit, wanting to kill crypto across the United States, and calling it unlicensed securities. Hmm. Well, I think they found their poison pan root. The idea that I don't think I'm giving them ideas, but all they have to do is declare it, then file suit and get in front of an ignorant jury, and voila, they get their way. But the rest of the world is not under that, so we're still safe as far as the usage of crypto.
Oh yeah, that's a huge part of this. Is sure they're taking great strides to drive cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and all of that out of the United States. Sure.
So is Europe, by the way.
Yeah. It will be moved out of the United States. Mm-hmm. It will be moved out of Europe. But the rest of the world isn't taking the same steps. And look, this genie is out of the bottle. Mm-hmm. This technology is going to get developed. Now, instead of it being developed in the light in the rich countries, it will get developed in the darkness and in the poor countries.
Well, they're going to turn the lights on pretty quick, because they're going to not be so poor anymore after they get their hands on some cryptocurrency.
Well, and in the dark, I mean, for example, one of the big reasons that I believe that they didn't just go ahead and say, here are the rules, is so that a lot of the people that would be willing to say, you know what, I'm going to do a fly-by-night company. I'm going to develop something that I don't care if it's completely illegal a year from now, because I can harvest before then.
Mm-hmm. Jet?
But I think we're safe. What I'd like to do is jump over to a conclusion of my, the discussion I've been trying to have about the magic of titles.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be real quick. We've talked about how, there's the delusion of the people and there's the kingdoms of the nations and different things like that. Well, the answer I've found is something we've always known. It's very simple. The magic of titles occurs somewhere in between the sociopathy, what I call a mental disorder, of a human who holds a title, who actually believes in their disturbed mind that they have the power, and then the individual's delusion or their timidity to do anything about it. And so here's a couple little short pieces of logic. If a human with the title imagines they have power, and the masses also imagine the person with the title has power, the tyrannical rulership and rules can persist. But if the people reject the notion that a human with special title has special powers, they in fact have no power outside of the willingness to exert gang violence against their fellow man. So here's the bottom line. All political power emanates from the barrel of a gun, period.
That's what Mao Zedong said, right?
Yes. And in order to help others gain that wisdom, the gun in the room has to be talked about very often. I would say as often as possible. In other words, they have no power without the guns. It's all in your mind. Own a gun.
One of the things that was unique about this situation as compared to like the 2008 crash, for example, is that on the one hand, they had like this $30 trillion balance sheet in assets. So mostly treasuries and mortgage-backed securities there. And
the
Federal Reserve.
The Reserve. Okay. Gotcha.
Right. So the Federal Reserve had on the one hand all of these assets, some $30 trillion that it was, trying to wind down the balance sheet on. And on the other hand, this $2 trillion sitting in excess reserves because it had this reverse repo rate, which is all really, really complicated.
Confusing.
You couldn't possibly understand it, except that it's actually really simple. There's a savings account for banks that only banks get to use.
Mm-hmm.
And they upped the rate on this. So then the banks went, that's actually paying now? Okay, I'll set some money aside in this because it's absolutely secure as the dollar itself, and it's giving me something back. So that means that all this money is not in circulation running around driving up prices.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that the Fed, whenever it wants to, can access this $2 trillion payload.
Is that where the $2 trillion came from?
That seems to be it, yeah.
Huh, okay. See, I didn't realize that. I figured they were just going to print it up.
Well, and so that's why it's $2 trillion instead of infinity trillion.
Hmm.
And this is a big part of this BPFT thing, is that it's another way of money printing that doesn't look like money printing. So it's not just a regular old nothing to get excited about the Federal Reserve buying its own debt, because that would freak people out. That would make people lose confidence in the dollar and whether or not it's worth anything. And then the dollar would against other currencies would go down. But no, here's this special little program over here that we're only doing. We're only doing this because such a big bank failed. I mean, we weren't going to do this otherwise. But since it's an emergency, we have this little program over here, and it just so happens to print money.
So you're saying, let me see if I followed you, you're saying the reverse repo program is how they're funding this new bank term funding?
I think that's
I think that's where this is coming from. They didn't say that in their press release. At least I didn't see it.
Not that I've seen yet, but okay. I mean, I can't see any other reason that it would cap out at $2 trillion.
It won't cap out at $2 trillion, so that might be something you're missing here. So according to the story from Business Insider, the only reason that – we'll get to the reason why it's being touted at $2 trillion. But there's a note that's been – I don't know if it's a press release or something that got leaked from JPMorgan Chase – that is saying the Federal Reserve may inject up to $2 trillion in the banking system. The estimate comes after the central bank's weekend announcement that it's creating an emergency loan mechanism dubbed the Bank Term Funding Program, which is what we're talking about here. The initiative is meant to prevent, they say, the kind of run on deposits that sank Silicon Valley Bank last week after it sold its bond portfolio for a $1.8 billion loss. JP Morgan's analyst said the usage of the Fed's bank term funding program is likely to be big. So they're predicting a lot of these regional banks or whoever is going to be tapping into this.
I agree. It is going to be used. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if literally every bank used this because it is such a gift.
Because they're all in over their heads on these bonds, right?
Every single well, the Fed itself is in over its head.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these, you know, treasuries, they're not worth what they were when they bought them.
Caller, you are on Free Talk Live. What's your name?
Calling from Florida. Used to be in New England.
Welcome, sir.
I was basically calling to get you guys' mailing address because I have about terabyte or so of data that you guys need to know that I've been researching for about 15 or 20 years. It goes back to the 1209 concession of King John Lackland to the Pope, all the way forward until the 1867 British North America Act signed by Queen Victoria, 3031 Victoria Chancery Scroll number 3. And then
this sounds really, really deep, and I got to be the first to tell you, I don't have time to look through a terabyte of data. Right. We don't have like producers or anything like that that we can assign this to. What's the main? I mean, obviously it's a terabyte of data, but I mean, we don't have all night to talk about it. What do you think that is going to be revealed? What's the most important thing that we would learn from looking at this?
The top five. 1933, what FDR did on March 3rd in cohorts with his previous president when they repealed over 1,000 United States regulations and put in their bankruptcy. The fact that the IRS does not exist and is actually a corporation that belongs to the Declaratory Trust Corporation of the District of Columbia.
So who did they put on the stand in my trial that claimed to be an IRS accountant if they don't exist?
When you consented to the trial, you consented to your jurisdiction to do whatever you wished.
You haven't been paying
by
much attention,
their
man.
Rules, my friend.
He didn't consent to
I'm
a
sorry,
trial.
But that's
they
the
beat
truth.
Down his door.
That's correct. When you consent to be their piece of paper U.S. citizen and you consent to their terms of their contract.
I wish it worked like that. I really do.
Yourself.
Yeah, same.
I really
do. I've done a lot of this research as well. I've seen a lot of this information, and I've taken the time to, you know, withdraw my consent and, you know, make that known, but they still won't put me in a prison cell. Huh?
When you do it correctly.
Ah, okay. So
you know the one special method that they will actually follow.
My friend, I don't claim to be special at all. Not
well, let me tell you, there's a lot of people that have tried these things, and they all go to jail or get shot every single time. These tyrants do not follow
the
rules.
Times, especially when they try to sell the stuff using Federal Reserve notes, which is commerce, especially when they attempt. I used to listen to Blogspots.
Okay, so you believe you've got the secret sauce. You've got
No. I don't say I have the one answer at all.
Okay, but you told me that we didn't do it right. So you know how to do it right.
If it hasn't, I know how to do probably 60 to 80% of it.
Okay.
Maybe 75.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sounds to me like that 20% will get you killed.
Yeah, that's not good enough, right? Like, you have to have something that's going to work, or else they're going to throw you in a prison cell.
Okay, great. So you've got a terabyte of data, and it gets you not all the way there. And look, if you've got 10 terabytes of data, if you've got a gigaquad of data, and you've gone through all of it, and it gets you 99.9% of the way, and they still shoot your dog and put you in a cage, then it's not real useful.
Joe's in Maryland. You're on Free Talk Live, Joe.
Yeah. Hi, Ian. Hi, Pete. This, remember, both you guys are in my prayers.
Thanks. What's on your mind
Appreciate
tonight?
It.
Okay. You want to talk about conspiracies?
Not really, but
I do.
You know, it's fine.
Well, the other guy was talking about it, so I'll give you the real deal.
All right.
Nine families control everything. The five lower tier are the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, the DuPonts, and the Morgans.
Okay.
The top tier are the Windsors, England, Hanovers, Dutch, Habsburg, you know, collapsed from the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and I can't remember the name, but it's the House of Denmark, because they're the longest ruling royalty class, and they've been ruling in the world. They've been ruling for over 700 to 800 years.
Okay.
And they all want to keep us down like sheep. I think the guy from the Weef, Crossbaby, he's representing the people in Holland. And
are these the most controlling families in the Western world? Because it seems to be leaving out Asia. I mean, they got to have some big guys over there too, right?
No, not really. Asia wasn't really that big.
And, well, it is now. I mean, there's like there's more than a billion people in China and a billion people in India.
But when they formed this alliance, they like India, they were under the British control.
They were.
The Chinese were also, you know, under part of it, you know, Hong Kong under British control. And
yeah, that's like an island.
They weren't very powerful. They just built it up now. But those are nine countries. And what they do is they squeeze all the others economically. Now, you think that the United States has a lot of power. They're also controlled by them. And it's through the advisors and things like that that they, you know, tell the president, well, you should do this and you should do that. Mm-hmm. Now, there were two wild cards in this equation. Trump, when he became president, he wasn't being controlled by anybody. And Putin.
How do you know that?
Okay, before my accident, right, I just remember a little bit about that. I don't know much about computers. I was just hitting buttons and everything like that. And it came up on my computer. And it, somebody had the theory about that, and he wrote it out and everything, and it really made sense. And like you say, Holland's a small country, but World Dutch Shell, they control a lot monetarily. The Windsors control a lot monetarily. When the Habsburg Empire collapsed, they took the money.
I didn't know the Habsburgs were around at all.
Denmark controls a lot.
I never even heard of them, but I guess that's the point.
Oh, Habsburgs, no, they were an incredibly powerful European family, mm-hmm. and the most inbred.
Oh, wow. That's why they wouldn't be around anymore, right?
Exactly. No, they literally inbred themselves to death.
Wow.
They had the Habsburg chin, and yes, they became dumber and dumber with every generation.
But that kept the wealth in a single family. That was the family in Portugal who did that. The Habsburg didn't inbreed like that.
Habsburg chin. Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay. Thing, huh?
I'm surprised to hear you say that the Windsors are more powerful than the Rothschilds. I mean, you know the old story about how the Rothschilds basically bought all of England when Napoleon was coming through.
Right, and what happened? Napoleon lost.
Yeah, and that was the thing. The Rothschilds had gotten wind of the fact that he'd lost at Waterloo before anyone else in England had gotten wind of that. So they start acting as if he won in Waterloo and was on his way there to conquer. So everyone just starts fire selling everything they've got, and these guys, through some other people mostly, start buying up all these assets at pennies on the dollar and end up owning a majority of England.
The claim here on this article about the Habsburg chin is that Carlos II was the last of the Spanish Habsburgs. He was born with He was born of several physical disabilities, including a lower jaw so pronounced that he struggled to eat and talk. Historians and geneticists both believe that these stemmed from a rare genetic disorder caused by centuries of inbreeding. His physical deformities were so noticeable, he earned the name El Hechizado, literally meaning the hexed one, or more colloquially, the bewitched. There's a really interesting book that Bonnie and I were, it was an audiobook in our case, that we were reading. Let's see, what was it called? You Are the Placebo. And it's a really interesting book by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And he just basically spends most of the book looking at so many different studies of and examples and case studies or whatever of people and the power of the placebo effect in so many different ways. And it's amazing. And of course, a lot of these medicine companies, they actually want to get rid of the requirement to show that their proposed medicine is actually more effective than the placebo, because the placebo effect is so strong.
Right.
A lot of the proposed pills that they want you to take at God knows how much money per dose, a lot of them, they don't do better than the placebo.
Right.
Or they're like right there with the placebo or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, what is the point of this?
And there's a lot of chicanery with that data too, where like, oh, well, it didn't actually do better than the placebo, but they fudged the numbers this way and that, and it looks like it did. So it gets approved. It, you know, they grease the right palms, especially.
Oh, yeah.
It gets out there in the market. But here's the thing. The placebo effect that it's doing is enough that it's an effective medicine.
Now
so...
You may want to have a pill now, ready for what's going to happen with these banks.
Just real quick, though, there's also the nocebo effect.
There is, yeah.
So now you can have the opposite of a placebo effect. If you think you're going to get sick, you almost certainly will.
I mean, have you seen the hypochondriacs before?
Right.
That's now, what those people live by.
And they actually do manage to get themselves to get sick.
There's also stories, and again, this is also covered in You Are the Placebo, where somebody will go and visit... you know, a voodoo doctor or something like that, or somebody's going to read your future. And if you actually believe that, and that person tells you you're going to die at this, you know, by this certain point, you may actually manifest that in your reality, and you may very well die because you believed it.
Yeah. And there is such a thing as a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm really, really hoping that this $1 million Bitcoin is one such thing.
Oh, that would be nice. That's something we can talk about. But you wanted to talk about this FedNow, the sort of the steps towards the CBDC, the central bank digital currency. We're seeing different countries around the world going faster or slower at this. The United States hasn't yet authorized it, but... there's something that's happening.
Well, so it got announced 3 days after they took down Signature Bank that this thing's coming out in July.
And what is this thing?
So now, when we talk about a central bank digital currency, that we should actually be a little bit more specific. Now, what we're usually referring to is a retail central bank digital currency. So now if there's something on the back end, you know, banks talking to each other, that is this central bank thing. I mean, yes, it's going to have those controls that we were talking about, but it'll be controls of the banks rather than controls of the people. So that's basically what this is the first step on. This is the first plank, the backbone, if you will, of the central bank digital currency system on the wholesale side.
This is what, as I understand it, this is what Ripple wanted to do. This was the proto-cryptocurrency that was designed to help the banks transfer value interbank, meaning from bank to bank, not user to user, but from bank to bank. And that sounds a lot like what this FedNow thing is. It's basically they said, yeah, we don't need to hire you Ripple people for that. We'll just do it ourselves. And then they did.
That's exactly right. Well, and here's the thing. They went to court, which means they had to release all this data. And wouldn't you know, a lot of this looks really similar to what Ripple was doing.
Oh, they grabbed the code?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. You have all of this open source code anyway. Mm-hmm. So all of this development's been done on cryptocurrencies. And they can just go, okay, that works.
We'll take that
works. Oop.
Yeah.
That makes people free.
Right.
That decentralizes the system. Can't
Delete.
Use those things. And this is just the first step. This is the first plank in the direction of a central bank digital currency.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.